We are less than a month away from the biggest World Cup ever, right here in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I'm Heath Pierce, former U.S. men's national team player with stops in the Bundesliga, MLS, Denmark, and Sweden. And I'm also the host of Orange Slices, sponsored by FanDuel Predicts. Orange Slices is the place to bring your World Cup memories to life. The people, the moments, and the stories that don't always make the highlight reel, but help shape everything we love about this game. Think of it as your soccer hang all summer long. Listen to Orange Slices wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Take the Black, your podcast that dives deep into the world of fantasy and science fiction. And of course, and always, Westeros, A Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, House of the Dragon. The list is getting longer every single year. I am one of your hosts, Daniel Roman, the editor of winterscoming.net, and I'm psyched as always to be here with Mark Nettles of House of Nettles. How you doing, Mark?
We're back.
It took us
2 years, but we knew it was going to come around, and I'm just happy to be here to talk about all that Westerosi political drama, war, love stories, all of it put together into one can of soup.
One can of seawater soup or whatever, clam chowder, because we're on a naval episode. Yeah, it feels good to be back. You know, it's always cool, like, you know, talking about all the stuff happening in the off season, but there's something extra exciting. You know, we did this for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, where we had these Sunday after shows going through the episodes, and there's just something, there's a little extra magical about that. So yeah, I'm hyped that we're back. And obviously we're talking House of the Dragon tonight, so don't expect other stuff. We have to talk about this premiere episode of House of the Dragon season 3. We both seen it, so I guess, do we want to just dive right in? Like, should we just be like, hey, what are your thoughts? Do you have anything you want to go over before we get into this beast of an episode, the Battle of the Gullet?
Battle of the Gullet, like you said, 72 minutes, one of the longer episodes we've gotten from this Westeros world. I think it's a good time to just go right in, talk about all our thoughts, what we liked about it, what we loved about it. I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Yeah, no beating around the bush. Just like the Gullet itself, which came out of the gate swinging, we're going to get right into it. So yeah, House of the Dragon season 3 premiere is out. And like you said, it's a long episode. And it's an epic episode. It's probably their most ambitious, probably, battle episode that they've done that we're aware of as of right now in terms of the filmmaking of it. But it had a lot of other stuff too, because it's the premiere. They had to check in around the map. So off the cuff, like, first impressions here, Mark, did you like it? Did you like this episode?
I'll say this. I did. I liked the episode. For a House of the Dragon episode, I thought it did a great job. I was here for it. It was a good episode. But and okay. I know we kind of discussed this a little while ago, and I see it on itinerary, kind of how the episode made us feeling like, is it a new season?
Yeah.
Or is it a continuation from exactly from where we left off, because we know season 2 had to be shortened for a lot of things happening in the background. And I don't know, I would have loved this episode more as episode 9 of season 2.
Yeah.
But it was still good. I still enjoyed myself. I'm not saying I didn't have a good time, but I know, like, man, if I would have got off episode 8 and went right into this, I think it would have hit a little differently.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you. It's such an interesting thing that, like, you know, they've had a lot of time to hype up this episode and work on it and all this stuff, but it really does feel like, I don't know how much they really reworked the writing of this to work as a season premiere. I assume there's one or two things they added in, you know, like we see Ormond Hightower. Presumably if this was episode 9, Ormond wouldn't have been in it. So there are a few small things like that, but aside from that, like, the whole Gullet arc, Rhaenyra, Jace, all of that, I imagine they probably didn't change it over much. And yeah, it to me, it felt more like episode 9 too. And I agree with you. I think as good as this episode was, and I liked it too, I think it was a strong House of the Dragon episode. It's gonna probably, like, when we look back on this series, like, anytime anyone talks about like the top 10 episodes or something, like, this is always going to be in the conversation, I think. Like, we'll have to at least say, does the Gullet deserve to be in this ranking or not? Like, because it is a huge episode. But yeah, I think you're right. I think I probably would have liked it more as episode 9 too. Like, because the buildup for Jace's whole storyline was all last season, you know? So it's like, we got all the buildup for these things that would have made these things land even better, but it was 2 years ago. So how fresh is it? So yeah, I mean, that's the conundrum of our streaming world we live in, because we know it wasn't House of the Dragon's fault that it got pushed. It was like a studio mandate. So yeah, so there's that. So there are caveats. I assume that there are going to be some caveats, and we don't need to go super hard on book stuff, but we can talk about the book a little bit if we want to. They made some changes. Did that hang you up at all? Or not really in this episode.
And I know one of the main changes was, in the book Fire and Blood, the dragon seeds who we saw way out there in the Riverlands waiting for Vhagar to come, they were in the books. They were at the Battle of the Gullet. They were the secondary surprise when the Triarchy came up. They're like, all right, we're going to hit the Sea Snake hard. It's like, oh my goodness, here are, was it four dragons coming, descending from the sky? No, was it five dragons?
Five. Yeah.
Five dragons descending from the sky. And I enjoy the Battle of the Gullet, but that would have been a sight to see, like, the true power of Team Black all swarming in at one time. But I did kind of miss that, especially seeing how Alice kind of told them, hey, you're needed. The queen needs you. And we could talk about that later. Yeah. But we had Alice Rivers just pop out of nowhere. And, like, where did you come from? How did you know the dragon seeds were here? But I guess it's kind of hard to hide dragons in the first place.
Yeah. And she's a witch, as she just straight up says. Who are you? I'm a witch. Okay.
All right. I guess she was trying to say that snarky, or if she really meant, like, I am a witch. Do I think she's a witch? Yes. But
but she also snarked it. She knew it would creep Ulf out. She knew.
That's a conversation to itself, but... Yeah, I miss that element and the sheep stealer device they use. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I'm not gonna lie and say I would have loved to have nettles in there.
Of course.
So definitely a different take, but not a bad take. It was still enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, there are a lot of elements that make this the Battle of the Gullet, and there's other stuff. I wanted to talk other stuff, but it's hard not to talk the Gullet when we're talking about this episode. So, like, we'll talk about it, then we'll talk about other stuff, then we'll probably come back to it or whatever. But yeah, I think this is obviously, it's a different version of the Battle of the Gullet than what happens in the book. There are a bunch of other moving pieces that aren't there. Like you said, the dragon seeds. Jace's whole story is a little different. In the book, he's kind of, you know, the dragon seeds were his baby in the book, if I remember right. So it's like, it's not like impetuous Jace locks Rhaenyra in her chamber and goes because he's a kid who wants to prove himself. It's, they realize they can't rest Rhaenyra. He goes, and then all four dragon seeds, which is like, that's not just two kids trying to, like, fill the gap. That's like, you brought the legit cavalry to this battle, you know, these four large dragons. So it's not as reckless in the novel. And then, so there are lots of little things like that. The sheep stealer of it all is very different. But I do think that they made the Gullet memorable in its own right for the show and for what it is. We have a very different sheep stealer, which we're going to have to talk about probably next. Cause I was really torn. Like, I really liked a lot of the sheep stealer scenes, even as my brain was like, we're really speed running the whole idea of how Nettles befriended sheep stealer, which, for people who haven't read the book, this commoner Nettles fed sheep stealer sheep for, like, pretty sure it's like weeks to befriend this dragon. And Rain is like, here, have a sheep. And sheep stealer's like, you're okay. Cause we know this is like the next day from when she found sheep stealer, because Rhaenyra, only one day has passed for Rhaenyra since she met Allison. But yeah, anyway, lots of stuff to mull over. So since we're talking about Sheep Stealer, how did you feel about aside from just missing Nettles, which I think we both wish they had probably put Nettles in the show, but like, what did you like what they did with Reyna and Sheepstealer? Did it work for you? What'd you think of the new dragon?
Yeah, Sheepstealer looked cool up close, how scaly they were, like all those spikes running down their spine. It looks like a dragon that's had a rough life. Like, it's been wild this whole time. It's had to grow, it's had to fend for itself, and to see her be able to slightly tame Sheepstealer, like, and it kind of lends itself. We know in the novels, like you said, Nettles, it took a long time to gain that trust.
Yeah.
Quick trust, not a lot of time to train and get that true bond. Like, Sheepstealer's never been bonded with another human, so this is new on both fronts. So it's understandable why she wouldn't be able to have that control once they got all the way to the gullet.
Yeah, totally. That was the thing that kind of saved it for me a little bit, because I really liked, like, the production of Sheepstealer, like, was, I mean, Sheepstealer in terms of dragons was the star of this episode. You know, he got a lot of close-up good shots that were really interesting and had a lot of personality. It's probably the Reyna Sheepstealer scenes were probably the most the largest amount of scenes we've gotten in a while for, like, just a rider bonding with a dragon. Like, I can't remember the last time the show gave us, like, multiple scenes in a row where a dragon and a rider just feeling each other out. Maybe the red sewing, but even then that was like a huge set piece, so it's not the same. But I was like, man, she's just gonna immediately claim this dragon. But then, of course, Sheepstealer doesn't listen to her, and that for me, I was like, okay, that's cool. I can get behind this. Sheepstealer was like, you're okay, little human, but I'm still going to do what I want.
It listened to her to an extent. Like, all right,
yeah,
I'm going to fly where you want to go, but, you know, Dracarys doesn't mean, I'm Dracarys, anything I see, it's all bad to me.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Burning ships, burning friendly ships. Going after Bela, how did you feel about Sheepstealer kind of being in the thick of it when Jace went down?
I mean, it was Sheepstealer and, by proxy, Reyna's fault that Jace had to fly that low. Like, Sheepstealer was a threat. Like, Jace was trying to get away and escape, because Jace learned earlier in that battle, I can't get too close to the ships. They do have a weapon to at least stop mid-sized to small dragons.
Yeah.
So, had to do it again, and of course, it did cost him his life.
Yeah. So Reyna, they're really going into uncharted water with Reyna in this season. And, you know, the one thing I'll say for it is they really committed to it. They gave Reyna probably the biggest spotlight she's gotten in an episode of this show is in this episode, where we get this whole storyline. She's the opening scene of the episode is her, you know, bonding with Sheepstealer. And then, inadvertently causes the deaths of a lot of Valyrian soldiers and Jace. And obviously that's going to play out, because I think only Jace saw it was her. I don't think Bela saw that it was Reyna on Sheepstealer. So that's going to be interesting. I'm definitely curious to see just over the course of this season, because obviously at this point, we can sadly say they are cutting the character of Nettles, even if they involve bits of Nettles' storyline or they reinvent it somehow. Nettles, the commoner who trained this dragon, is not in the show. But Reyna just kind of hangs out in the Vale for most of Fire and Blood at this point. So I do think when we look back on the show, it's like, this is going to be the sort of thing where it's like, oh, that's a unique story to the show that is just totally different than the book and is interesting in its own right. Hopefully, I hope. it's so hard to talk about anything other than the gullet. Did the lack of the Gay Abandon bother you? So, for people who don't know, the Gay Abandon is the ship that was taking Viserys and Aegon, Rhaenyra's youngest kids, to the Free Cities. And in the book, they get captured on that ship. They run into the Triarchy fleet, and that's what kicks off the battle. They weren't involved at all in this episode. But did that change things for you at all?
It does, because that's one of the pillars in the trauma that deals. Because we, And I don't know if we can do a spoiler for Final, not a spoiler for the book or anything past this point, but I don't know if I could talk about Aegon, her youngest.
Well, I think we could talk about, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you, viewer, listener, if you want not book deets, you probably want to listen to a different podcast, because I think we can get into it. I think we have a lot of listeners who have read it, so I think we can, you know, we maybe don't need to go nuclear with spoilers, but like,
yeah,
it, Aegon, the kid Aegon who's involved in this, what happens to him is important in the long game, is I think what you're getting at, right?
Yeah, in the long game, especially we see, like you said, it starts off the battle, their ship being attacked, but he's not able to save his brother, but he does escape because he jumps on his small dragon Stormcloud and is able to fly back to, he makes it at the Dragonstone, isn't it?
He does, it, yeah. He makes it to Dragonstone. He tells them, hey, Viserys got captured. There's this fleet coming. And then his dragon dies, Stormcloud. So Stormcloud carried him there, and that was all Stormcloud could do because he's a hatchling and he got shot full of arrows. So none of that happened. Stormcloud's still alive in the show.
Yeah, that's what makes
Viserys.
Me... Yeah, like I wonder if they're going to maybe change that up. Maybe they'll address that in the next episode and we'll see him. I'm unsure at this moment. Yeah. I think that'll be... It's interesting to see what they're going to do with that plot. Of course, we got 7 more episodes for us, the viewer, to figure it out as well. But I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, same. That's one of those things that didn't even occur to me till we're talking about it right now. That, like, the gay abandon, I missed it for the setup, you know, and Jace, like, kind of coming into the rescue and all that stuff. But it didn't really occur to me, oh, wait, these characters are still alive. Like, obviously, I'd thought of, how will this affect Aegon's trauma? Because the fact his dragon dies in the book is like, that's a big thing where it's like Aegon's relationship with dragons is, it's the beginning of it being very different than Rhaenyra's relationship with dragons or Daemon's. But yeah, the fact that his dragon's still alive, that Viserys is still alive, I'm curious to see what the show does. That's a real ripple effect thing from the way they change this. So speaking of Rhaenyra, she had some scenes this episode.
put in timeout.
put in timeout by Jace. And, you know, pretty gung-ho on Alicent Hightower's plan to just go to King's Landing. And she announces it. And her advisors are like, this is outrageous. We can't do this. And then they get word of the gullet. And Jace is like, told you. I told you this was going to happen. What did you make of Rhaenyra in this episode?
All her advisors around her, I would have the same thoughts. Like, that is a trap. That'll be silly. We can't go out there. Like, why would we expose ourselves and expose you, the queen, by just showing up the King's Landing? Because you're telling us Vhagar's not going to be there. You're telling us the gates will just be open and we won't have to hunker down for a long siege. And that Helaena won't get on her dragon at all in that fight. Like, that's what we have to hope for and what you're telling us. And that's not a good risk. And you can tell everyone was kind of apprehensive to the point that when Rhaenyra's like, there are ships out there, she tries to go, I'm going to attack. We're going to get everyone. I'm going to be the one to fly out there on my dragon, get my riding leathers ready. That's crazy. Calm down.
Yeah, totally.
You're the face of this. Without you, it goes to Jace too quick. Nobody's going to respect that. They might as well go to Aegon's side.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, it's an interesting thing with some of these, you know, Westeros war things where it's some people like to lead from the front. Seems like Rhaenyra really wanted to lead from the front here, but like risking Rhaenyra, like you said, like if she dies, that's the end of the war. They lose. Everybody who supported her is either going to have stiff penalties or be beheaded or whatever. So, massive risk. And she didn't really think about it because she just wanted to get out there and do something. I really liked Harry Collitz had a few really good scenes as Jace, you know, calling Rhaenyra on this stuff. And then kind of strong-arming Sir Laurent Marbrand into locking Rhaenyra in her room. I really liked that scene for Jace where he's like, you know, your life for hers. Like, your job is to protect her even from herself. And we can all see that what she's doing is probably going to get her killed or could get her killed. That heavy. I liked that. And then of course his scene with Bela where he's like, we can do this. He's got like a mad glint in his eye in that scene where that might be my favorite scene of Harry Collins in the entire show. Yeah.
He was ready. Like he was 100%. He's like, we can do this. Is what he's been preparing and training for his whole life. Unlike Rhaenyra, you know, that's unfortunate because she was a woman. She never got the training at arms, getting ready for battle. But this is what Jace has been preparing for under the tutelage of all those teachers, trainers. I mean, this man got to learn under the Rogue Prince himself. So
yeah,
he got his time to shine, and unfortunately, he did sink.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. He did. What was your, so Rhaenyra had one scene that kind of jarred me out of the episode a little bit, which is when she's in the room, she takes her riding leathers and then she chops them to bits. And then she has this line that she kind of whimpers that is, I'm going to mess up the line. it's a very famous Elizabeth I line about, it's something like she has the frail body of a woman, but the heart and soul of a king, or something like that. I know that like this is an actual historical line that they cribbed in the show from Elizabeth I.
Okay.
It's from like a speech she gave, but yeah, that something about that scene took me out of the episode. I laughed inappropriately the first time I watched it. I was like, what are we doing here? How does this reflect on Rhaenyra? What was your reaction to that scene? Did it work for you? Did it not work for you?
I'll agree. It was a little like, oh, okay, that's a... It didn't sound like something her character... I can see her saying it, but I agree to the fact that it was almost too Shakespearean for what we're doing. Like, it was like somebody else wrote that line to fit in the House of the Dragon and then feeling like that was what a character in House of the Dragon would say almost when I heard it.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't realize this the first time I saw this, cause I've seen the episode a few times now, but that's literally the case. Like it's not something they wrote for House of the Dragon. They literally took a historical line and plopped it in. Yeah. It just felt a little out of place to me too. Like, you know, in terms of like what are we conveying about Rhaenyra? And I think that like the pressures of rule are obviously going to be a large theme this season, but like if they're trying to make it seem like Rhaenyra is strong, like that scene isn't it, I don't think. And if they're trying to show she's really ineffectual and kind of pathetic, maybe that scene is it, because it's a direction issue to me almost even more than the line itself, like because it is like she portrayed it from a place of weakness, or Emma Darcy, they portrayed it from a place of weakness, that line, like really kind of like no one in the room believed her probably when she said it, because they just watched her have this tantrum. So yeah, not the best episode for Rhaenyra, but it was never really going to be her episode anyway. I think she'll have some to come.
Oh yeah, for sure. We've seen the clips from the trailer with her in the Red Keep. So she's gonna have a lot more to do in this season. So we always knew she was gonna take a back seat. Did I know it was gonna be her locked in timeout, locked away? I do feel sorry for Sir Lauren.
Yeah, not gonna end well for Sir Lauren, I bet.
No. if he does face the punishment for what he did, I mean, he'll probably be a head shorter.
Yep.
I don't know how you can spin that any other way than bad, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, given what happened to Jace, like it was bad enough before, but then with that happening to Jace, it's like, okay, yeah. that's really, that's it. That's probably it for him.
Probably a win you can go from Lord Commander just back to one of the King's Queen's Guard, but now, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, I can't help but wonder how much of this could have been avoided if good old Daemon Targaryen was around to give his two cents. Because if there's Daemon's an impulsive hothead, but if there's anyone you want around when you're going to war, it's probably him.
Yeah.
Daemon had a couple of cool scenes, or maybe it was just one cool scene. Actually, I think we might have only really gotten the one scene with Daemon, where we see what seemed to me like the aftermath of the Battle of the Red Fork. Is that what you thought it was too?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And so he's there with Oscar Tully. They debate the best way to get rid of bodies. So it's little cultural differences where Damon wants to burn them. Oscar says we need to bury them because we're rivermen. And then the Winter Wolves show up with Jason Lannister's head. We get our introduction to Roddy the Ruin, played by Tommy Flanagan. So how'd you feel about all that stuff?
I thought it was a good introduction to Damon, and the way he was just quietly moving across the battlefield, it definitely made it feel like that episode with the crab feeder in season one. I'm like, he's just moving, just killing one stab here, a quick fight, another stab there. A good reintroduction to his character and just seeing like, hey, he had, so we, last time we saw him, he was getting all the Riverman to his side to fight. We see that coalition was able to come together, and it does seem like, especially seeing the what we saw with that fight and the Winter Wolves coming and showing us Jason Lannister's head, like, we've significantly halted the Westermen. Does that mean they got all of them? No, but they, that's a good dent in their army.
Yeah, I mean, he did say we have more lions to hunt when the Winter Wolves showed up. I love that they kept there's a Winter Wolves line that's like, you know, lines from Fire and Blood are such a funny thing because it's not a dialogue heavy book. It's almost like Cliff's Notes. And then once in a while, George R. R. Martin just throws a banger of a line out and says, they said this badass thing. And then it's back to Cliff's Notes. And we've come to die for the Dragon Queen is the one the Winter Wolves get in the book. And I love that they kept that here as their introduction, even though they're giving it to Damon instead of the phrase. Totally fine with that. I didn't mind that they skipped the Red Fork either.
No. I understand. We can't do, if we tried to put every battle that had one line mentioned in Fire and Blood, like I was refreshing myself and I was reading it, it'll say, and they were fighting here. It's like, yeah. Okay, that's one line. Are we going to show a whole battle 10-minute scene for that?
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Yeah, totally. There are other more important ones in the Riverlands. So that was an instance where I was like, you know what? I'm kind of behind this. I like that we saw the aftermath. I like that Damon, you know, he's older here than he was in the Stepstones with the crab feeder. And there was almost like a tiredness to him as he was going along, like killing people who were already wounded or like that sort of thing where he's kind of cleaning up the end of the battlefield. And like almost in like a business-like way, like there was never a feeling that like Damon was panicked or like in the bloodlust or whatever. Like he was just going along killing people. Somebody attacked him and he just punched him a few times because he felt like punching him, and then he killed him. Like, I love seeing Damon back in action, and you know, talk about leading from the front. When he sees the other army, he calls everyone to him and he stands in the front. Doing probably what Rhaenyra wishes she could do, except Damon's been doing it for decades, so he's definitely earned that spot.
Yeah. Next time, Rhaenyra. Next time. Well, but yeah, it was good seeing Damon. I'm about to say, did we hear Caraxes in the background?
Yeah, Caraxes was there. We saw glimpses of Caraxes burning stuff, and then when they assembled in front of the Winter Wolves, Caraxes is over them. It's a really cool shot where it's like Damon, the army, and then Caraxes, because Caraxes is so well trained, he can just hang out with an army on the ground and not smush people.
Exactly. That's what Sheep Steel is missing. We can't put Sheep Steel with an army yet.
definitely not. But yeah, the one scene of Damon's good. I'm curious to see what they do with the fish feed, which they kind of set up here. They talked about people going to regroup by the God's Eye. But then we saw Jason Lannister's head. Jason Lannister dies in the Red Fork in the books, but there's another, you know, another noble who kind of takes things over from him. So it's not really clear what they're going to do with that. Do you think we're going to get the fish feed next episode?
Yeah, I can feel us either getting it in the next episode or the episode after. Just because it is an important and just a cool battle, and you can do it so many different ways, like than the way it was mentioned in the book. So I can't wait to see their interpretation of how we're gonna have this battle near a body of water. I mean, a lake essentially. So it's not like you're bringing in too many warships. Like it's a different type of battle.
Yeah, in the book, there's no warships, no dragons. It's an army gets trapped against a lake. Other armies come in, they entrap them, and then they smush him back against the lake until everybody's dead. And it's described as like one of the bloodiest battles in this entire war. So yeah, I'm hoping we see it and they do a good job of it. But there's some other peeps we got to talk about before we get back to the gullet, because obviously that's where we're headed.
Oh yeah.
King's Landing, another plot line that I was a little torn about was Aemon and Alicent. I really liked the start of Aemon's storyline, where he's just like, he knows Aegon's gone, he's pissed, he's almost executing Orwile, you know, without even waiting to really get any answers. What were your thoughts on the King's Landing of it all?
Especially coming from Aemon, I enjoy just seeing him so impulsive. Like that's just Aemon. Like I'm going to do things right now. Like I'll figure it out as I go along. First step, I'm going to execute you because that's going to lead to my brother. How does killing you give me answers? The next person's going to have the answer. Yeah, I'm assuming totally. Where he was going. But I enjoyed that plot just showing him. And I enjoyed Allison a lot this episode. Was her plan with Rhaenyra, was that a little, in my opinion, silly goose? Yes. But just seeing how she's willing to save herself, her daughter, her grandchild by sacrificing Aemon. Did she have to kiss her son because he initiated it? Yes. Did that affect her? Yes. Yeah. I always wondered, did she think he was going to do that?
She looked pretty shocked to me.
Yeah. That tear, I was like...
Yeah.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, she looks pretty shocked, but I mean, who knows?
Yeah, knowing there's going to be a trap for him, but the way she was able to maneuver kind of the armies, convincing him to go to Criston Cole in the Riverlands to take Harrenhal and sending that letter to Gwaine, is that her nephew?
So Gwaine is her brother.
Oh, Gwaine's her brother.
She sent it to Ormond.
Ormond
is her cousin.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, Otto's nephew, who's the Lord of Old Town.
And it was just such a smart move by her to send that letters to hold that army for a little bit, because if she didn't, if they would have arrived while Rhaenyra had claimed King's Landing or had already claimed it, there would have been a lot of blood on both of their hands. So get them slowed down. Get Aemon out the way. The only other thing she has to do is make sure the gates open. But I guess that involves the next problem of there is no king there to lose their head as originally planned.
Yeah, totally. And with Aemon, I don't think she's necessarily sending Aemon into a trap. I think there was a trap for Aemon, but she didn't know it, I don't think. So like, I do think she genuinely wanted him out of King's Landing because she knew he'd die, even though she like said he's a monster and whatever. Like, Allison's motivations are a little unclear at times, I think. She waffles, at least where her kids are concerned. She waffles a little bit between, would she be fine with them getting killed? Would she be sad if they got killed? And maybe that's realistic considering how messed up her children are. But yeah, I like that she was still playing her own game. Like you said, she wrote to Ormond, asked him to wait. Got Aemon out of King's Landing to go meet up with Cole at Harrenhal, which is a strong fortress. Like, that is I like that Aemon just kind of thinks about it and he agrees. And like, sure, there's some Oedipus in there for why he does, but she also just made a good case for it. So he's like, yeah, I'll go do that. The kiss I was really torn about. that was the moment where I was like, what are we doing here? Like, because I feel like they're building, you know, the whole thing is Aemon has mommy issues. They hinted at it last season with the brothel madam where he just wanted a hug. So like, maybe they were trying to remind us of that. That's all set up, in my opinion, for the romance Aemon will presumably have this season. That is from the book, that is with an older woman. So, but yeah, I don't know what it does for Alicent as a character. You know, it feels like a thing they put in for Aemon to show us who Aemon is. But like, I'm torn on like, how is this going to serve Allison's storyline as well? If that makes sense.
Yeah. The kiss just seemed... I don't even get it. It's like, I didn't see anything to lead up. It's like, it happens and it's like, oh, okay. I guess this is a thing. Like, I don't think there was anything that we would have seen or read or inferred from anything that he's done to assume like, oh, I would love to kiss my mom. I have mommy issues. Doesn't mean I want to make out with my mom.
I agree with that. I don't think they properly set this up in a way. It really felt like it came out of nowhere. I did not love it. I did not like it. I don't know. You know, the show has done some interesting things with inserting mommy issue incest. Like Damon had the wet dream about his mom last season at Harrenhal.
I don't know. And it's like
that's another thing where it's like, you know, obviously Fire and Blood, bullet points, you know, they have to flesh stuff out. But it is kind of curious that they have chosen to make that a thing specifically that they are fleshing out for multiple characters is that really what they just want is to be their mom's lover. It's like, okay. I guess.
They're pulled the mirrors of each other. So if you're going to have one character have dream nookie nookie with their mom, then the other character has to at least kiss their mom. That's weird HBO math. That's HBO math. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that was probably my least favorite thing of the episode. Just because, again, like I feel like this show is really shit on Allison quite a bit at times. Like, and we'll see. This isn't the only Allison thing because I have seen a few episodes that I was really torn on. So I'm curious to see how we all feel about Allison as the season goes on, because to me it almost feels like they're. You know, she's kind of portrayed as a proto Cersei Lannister a little bit in the book. And it's felt to me like they looked at her and said, maybe we could make her a Sansa Stark instead. So jury's out, but I did not like Aemond and Allison.
Give me Cersei Allison. That's a better Allison. That's a funner Allison.
Yeah, and we got her a little bit in the first season. The Princess and the Queen Driftmark, those first couple of episodes with Olivia Cooke, that was the Allison of my heart. threatening Rhaenyra with a knife, you know, and being super petty and vindictive. But you're right that her plan kind of has gone to hell because Aegon's gone. Aegon and Larys, we got some interesting scenes of this episode. They're totally off book this season, which I'm fine with, because Aegon just disappears in the book, then he comes back way later. So this is one of those instances where I'm like, yeah, you give him a story. Don't give us a season without Tom Glenn Carney in it. Like, give us a story here.
Exactly.
What did you make of their whole little misadventure together?
immediately getting caught. But I, you know what, I appreciate the character of Aegon, because they said, hey, when they thought they were just some merchants, you just gotta bend your knee and swear your fealty to Rhaenyra, and he couldn't do it because nobody can say that Aegon don't have any morals, any gumption. He was like, no, I will not bend to Team Black's queen. That is not in my cars. Now, is that a courageous decision? Yes. Was it a dumb tactical decision instead of them just being able to go and leave? Completely stupid.
Yeah. I like that Aegon's like one of those characters where he, you know, he's done awful things. Mm-hmm. He's done really ineffectual things, but then occasionally he shows like he's got some real steel in himself, or like he's got some honor, some morals. He's not going to swear to Rhaenyra because that means something to him, whereas, you know, Larys Strong is one of those people who will just say whatever is most convenient in the moment, and he's fine with it, and that's his thing. So yeah, I really liked all of those scenes. I think Tom Glenn Carney just kills it. He's bringing a lot of interesting personality and like physical mannerisms to Aegon at this time, where he's recovering still from these horrible injuries. And I almost got the vibe of like Tyrion and Varys from Game of Thrones a little bit in their like dynamic, except a lot more toxic. You know, like these two, like the odd couple, like smart people on the road, kind of smart people who'd be really in trouble if they had to actually fight type of thing.
We may only have one super smart person with
this. That's true.
But I'm hoping, like, just seeing how Larys was able to negotiate that situation, that we do get more Larys this season. That's what I feel like between his character and Missarya and even Corlys. Like, I want to see more of their characters.
Yeah, totally. I very much agree with that. And like Schemer Laris doing interesting stuff. So yeah, I'm all for that. We only got, again, like the one scene. We had like a scene with a lot of different characters because the lion's share of this episode is all about the Battle of the Gullet, which gets signaled at like the 27 minute mark is when they sight Scirocco Lohar's fleet. And then I think the actual battle kicks off quite a bit later. Let's circle back to the Gullet. So you mentioned wanting to see more of Corlys's character. I think this was probably one of Corlys's best episodes of the series in terms of we saw a bunch of different sides of him. We saw him in action. We saw him just like leveling with Alan of Hull, being like, yeah, you know, I can't fix what happened, but I can be straight with you that it was my fault. It's not on you. I liked your mom for what it's worth.
I don't know how you liked your dad.
So, what were your thoughts on Corlys and Alan and kind of that whole storyline?
I very much so enjoy the dynamic of him just sitting there with his son, being like, "Hey, man, it was crazy what I did." But just able to accept the wrongs, like, "Hey, I know I did you and your brother wrong. That's my fault. I can't do anything about that in the past, but all we can do is move that forward." And we move past that scene. But even I know this is going to be at the end of it when Alan does yell out for his dad, like, "I'm like, where's my dad?"
Yeah, totally, totally. That's a big moment for him because he's been so resistant this whole time to having anything to do with Corlys. And then when he sees Corlys go overboard, he shouts "Father!" And then he goes and he kills Scirocco Lohar, which was a brutal fight scene in the water. I think the actors did really well for that scene.
That whole fight when both Corlys, the Queen of Neverwood ship, and Lohar's ship clashed together, just seeing everyone fight, people going overboard, stab, slashes. That was a good fight scene. That's probably one of the best of all the Westeros shows.
Yeah, I think that was definitely for me, that was the highlight of the battle, I think. Was that fight scene where the, you know, Lohar rams Corlys's ship. I liked the whole chase through the really narrow pass too.
Yes.
I loved that it was Corlys is like the most accomplished sailor in the world. And here he's going to remind everyone of that. And like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, when he asks for the helm, like sometimes there are things where it's like a character wants to do the heroic thing and it doesn't always make sense. Like, I know that we've seen some shots and trailers of like Rhaenyra with a sword. I don't know what she'll do with swords this season, but Rhaenyra has never trained with a sword. So, but I'm like curious, but jury's out. Corlys being like, "I'll take the helm. I got it. Let me do it." Felt like so earned. I was like, yes, like, of course he needs to be the one to steer the ship. He's the one who knows how to get through this pass. And then Lohar being like, "We'll follow him."
Yes.
Totally. I loved that, like, Lohar was devious and like, but also an equally skilled, you know, captain to get them through that. So that whole thing, I feel like the Gullet was interesting because they had to make it interesting for lack of a better word. Like, the stakes had to be raised. It's almost like you know, the Long Night they talked about when they made that for Thrones. They inserted the Arya bit in the middle because they couldn't just have it be a bunch of like sword fighting back and forth and like battle wall to wall because viewers would get tired. I felt like the Corlys stuff was kind of similar to that, where they were like, "Let's throw a little chase scene in here."
And it was a great addition. And I want to use an analogy to kind of describe the Corlys chase scene. It's like what I've seen explained on all those cool sports shows. When a great athlete tries to coach, they don't understand why you can't do what they did. Like, that, it's simple. Yeah. And it's like, "Well, I can't do that, coach. I'm not as good as you were." Corlys is giving that man directions. He started shaking. Corlys is like, "Hey, man, let me get the ball right now. This is not your moment. The moment's too big. You can't handle it. Let me get in there." So, like you said, just seeing that was crazy, and seeing how he had somebody as equal to him in Lohar, but also understanding where they were coming from. Like, Lohar's like, hey, Corlys burned and pillaged our home for over 2 decades. It's like, yeah, we want to get our get back too. We're going to go after Corlys, and we're going to burn his prize jewel in his castle of High Tide.
Yeah, totally. I think Abigail Thorne as Scirocco Lohar might have been my favorite performance of this episode, because she really, like, every single line, like, just sold it, made it so full of character, and, like, had, like, clearly, like, had thought about the delivery and stuff. Like, yeah, I did not expect to love Scirocco Lohar in this battle as much as I did, but every time she did another turn, or like that, like you said, like explaining to Tywin Lannister, I came here for the sea snake. I didn't come here for your battle. Like, like, just chef's kiss. It was so good. So yeah, I do want to ask too. So they've talked a lot about, like, the production of this thing, that, like, they put so much into making it. They built a bunch of ship sets. They did it all on a back lot. So nobody was actually on an ocean for this thing.
Put them in the water.
I definitely wish we'd had some practical stuff. Did the production stuff of this work for you? Were you drawn into it as well as you might have been if they had done more practical stuff, or did you not even notice?
I mean, I can notice they weren't in actual water, but I think it looked good. It looked well put together. My favorite scene was the chase through the past, involving the ships. So that, even besides, like, hey, you have all these ships, this epic battle on the water, what's your favorite part? Oh, when they were racing through the rocks, that's my favorite part. Forget that little battle over there. So I enjoyed the whole battle overall.
Yeah. Same, me too. I think I don't know if it hit quite as well as Rook's Rest for me, because it was so much backlot CGI stuff, where it's like we had CGI dragons flying over CGI ships, versus, like, Rook's Rest, they had this interesting thing where it was people on the ground they filmed and then dragons. So we had real stuff and then dragons, and they did the same thing for the Red Sewing. So I think that was always going to be one of the big struggles for the Gullet, the way they filmed it, was there's a lot of CGI, more than probably is typical for a Game of Thrones battle. But I do think they by far made the best naval battle in this franchise. Like, Thrones only really tried to do one, and it was kind of not very good, which is in the 7th season when the Iron Fleet kills the Sand Snakes, attacks Yara Greyjoy's peeps. That's the only time Game of Thrones really tried to do a naval battle, and it was not very good. And I think this one is solid. Like, when we look back on this show, it's like, yeah, they had a really solid naval battle episode. I hope there are other battles that are going to eclipse it down the road. But I also, it's nice that, you know, this wasn't a Daemon Rhaenyra. Like, it was nice to see characters like Corlys, like Scirocco, like Alan of Hull, like Jason Bala getting a spotlight.
Jace got his last spotlight. It was a good spotlight. It was a cool spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess to bring things around here to Jace, did they pull off the big death of the episode?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think they pulled it off. It was earned. They even set it up. As soon as they shot him with the weight the first time, I'm like, is that how he's going to go down?
Me too. I was like, they can't do it. That would be the lamest thing ever if it's that immediate. So kudos on the good fake out, House of the Dragon.
Yeah, good fake out. But you know what? That would be realistic. They caught him the first time. That would definitely would involve there being more dragons there. But it was a good setup for Sheep Stealer being the reason that he was brought to the water. And it happens like that in the books, in the terms that his dragon goes down, he is able to unhook himself from his dragon, from the Cermaq, and he's floating on some wood, and a crossbow catches him, then another, and then another one right in the neck, and that is the end of our favorite prince.
Yeah, totally. I think for any reservations I have about Sheep Stealer being the inadvertent cause, because I think House of the Dragon has had, it has just this impulse to make everything a misunderstanding. And it's always boggled my mind a little bit, like going right back to Aemond accidentally killing Lucerys. Like, it's just a crutch the show leans on a little bit, like, oh, we didn't mean to get this person killed. Whoops. And this, they made Jace's death a little bit of a whoops, even though the people who killed him, it wasn't Sheep Stealer, it wasn't Rhaena, it was the Triarchy Sailors. Like, that's legit. That is who kills him and who should be killing him. But I do think, for any reservations about the Sheep Stealer of it all, they really nailed Jace's actual death. I think, like, him going down in the water, him getting shot, all of that, I thought was they really did pretty much perfectly. I like that it was like the last shot of the episode too. They cut the music out.
Oh my god! So we've already seen from the trailer that, you know, I assume Rhaenyra's whole, like, when she's like crying, upset, I lost a second child because of this war. So
yep.
It's going to be interesting to see how she responds, and that child was disobeying her, locked in the room, made her so she wasn't able to participate. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel even more sorry for whatever's going to happen to Sir Lauren.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So two last questions for you here, because we've been talking about this for a minute, but not quite 72 minutes, but we're pushing an hour here.
We can get there if we need to.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. I mentioned the music with Jace a second ago, and it made me realize there's something that we didn't talk about that we probably should have right at the top of this thing, which is the new opening theme.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
Yeah, it was like a little more intense. I'm like, okay, you know, things are changing. There, the battles everywhere. I mean, I liked it for what I saw. Like, and it was pretty much the same tapestry. Does everything kind of recut?
Yeah, totally. A lot of the stuff on the tapestry was still the same. And then presumably they're going to add stuff just like they did last season, which mm-hmm. I like the whole tapestry thing. I thought that was a nice change up for the, you know, the opening credits in season two. I feel like the remixed opening theme is kind of what this opening theme needed. Because it always kind of irked me a little bit that they just recycled the Game of Thrones theme song without doing anything to it. It's like, be confident enough to stand on your own a little bit here, House of the Dragon. And this is a step in that direction in a good way, I think. I dig the slightly darker opening theme we got this season.
Yeah, this is a new show. Now, it's inspired by Game of Thrones, but this is not the same show as Game of Thrones. They needed their own thing to set themselves apart. Wish they would have done it sooner, but you know, they're doing it now, and hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah, totally. Okay, last question for you here, Mark. Did the Battle of the Gullet live up to the hype for you?
I think it was good. Like, Battle of the Gullet, great episode, great battle scene. I don't think it lived up to the hype that they were setting with all those interviews and what everyone was telling us. I don't think it lived up to that hype. I think this was a good episode, a good episode with a great battle scene, but just not to the extent they propped it up to be.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree with that. Like, credit where it's due, the gullet is a technical feat. I think they really went hard. I wish there was a little more practical stuff in there, because that's just one of the hallmarks, I think, of most of Game of Thrones' really good battles throughout its history has been, like, a lot of them are like in an actual location, or like, you know, you feel like you're on this muddy field, the Battle of the Bastards. Like, this one didn't quite have that, even though the digital effects for everyone being on the ship were a lot better than I expected. Honestly, I was worried it was going to look wonky, and it really didn't look wonky per se. But yeah, I think they didn't do themselves any favors, because if they hadn't said this is literally the craziest episode of television ever made, which that's what they've been saying for like 2 years, like Ryan Condal, the showrunner, some of the actors, some of the Lonnie Parastera, who I believe directed this episode, you know, this might be the craziest episode of television ever made. And I agree that like this is a really good episode of House of the Dragon. Like it is going to be in contention for some of the best episodes of the show. But like we live in a post Long Night world here. Like the Long Night, the production of that was like 3 times as long as the production of the Gullet, and it was all night shoots, and like they built the castle of Winterfell for it and all this other stuff. So yeah, I don't know that it lived up to the hype they set. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think it missed that mark, but you know, you still have a good time. So I mean, it's like I don't want to take that away and say like, oh no,
totally.
You're having a good time watching it.
Yeah, this is the hard thing about it, because it's like if they hadn't said that, it's like yeah, it totally lives up to the hype. It was a great battle episode. They clearly committed, like they didn't skimp on it. They skipped the Red Fork so they could do a bigger Gullet. Good choice. Totally good choice. But telling us this is literally going to be the craziest thing you've ever seen in your life, it's like I don't even think you cleared Rook's Rest in that regard, because that one really floored me too. But yeah, overall though, really solid episode. And hopefully it's, you know, this is the season premiere, so even better things ahead.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch episode 2 just so I can look at it and say like, kind of like I did at the beginning of this episode, do these 2 episodes feel like they would have been better suited if I saw them 2 years ago? Do they make season 2 better if I think about those other episodes? And if it ends on that, what I'd have been like, oh, okay, I can kind of see how this story really fit together.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to get your thoughts on that, because so like I've mentioned a few times, I have seen a few episodes. My review has been up on winterscoming.net for a couple of days now of the first 4. And I really did feel like they felt like 9 and 10 of season 2. And it, like the story arc felt very natural in that regard. So yeah, I'm curious to get your thoughts after next week's episode 2. It should be another banger of an episode. You know, we'll see how Rhaenyra reacts to the Gullet. We'll see how characters like Daemon and everyone else react to the news that this horrible battle just happened. But yeah, House of the Dragon, we are back. Is there anything else you want to talk about for this episode? I think we hit on most everything except maybe the dragon seeds.
I think
that's
really
too much.
No, cool things happened. Good way to save money. Just let's have 3 of those dragons way over there in the Riverlands. But yeah. Maybe something we could talk about on the short form content on TikTok and Instagram. So check us out there. We can talk a little bit more about the dragon seeds.
Yeah, totally. That's a really good call. Well, I guess we should probably call it then. Mark, where can people find you?
Yes, if you want more Mark Nettles, you can find me at House of Nettles on TikTok. It's House_of_Nettles. That's me. And I'm also on Instagram and YouTube, but TikTok's probably my main stage. See this face? You are in the right place.
Yes. And of course, winteriscoming.net. We are writing about House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones and all these things pretty much every single day. So if you are into the show this season, come check out the site, join in the conversations on social media. We're on, you know, all the major platforms, and subscribe to Take the Black. If you like this podcast, we're on Apple Music, Spotify, YouTube for videos. So like, and subscribe and all that good stuff. We are going to be breaking down each episode of House of the Dragon at our new time on Sunday nights, which is what we do when there's Game of Thrones show on. So come hang out, because we've got a pretty crazy season ahead. And Ryan Condal says it should be the best season we've ever seen on television. No, I'm sorry. That's not real shade, Ryan Condal. I love what you did with the Gullet. But yeah, for now, though, fare thee well. May your week go better than Jace's, and we'll see you next week in Westeros.
All right, bye.